it's only me, then it's a short service, and we can all race off to our mums if they're in the city. But I chanced upon a story. It's someone else's story, and it was in the New Zealand Herald, and it's an amazing story, and it was sort of about a week ago, and it kind of encapsulates, I think, mothers. So listen to this. It was meant to be a play date, two kids getting together for fun. But it turned into a day of terror, with a mother and son suffering the worst dog attack injuries ever seen by the surgeon who repaired them. Did you read this story? On April 10, Carolyn Davies took 7-year-old Sheldon to meet a new friend in West Auckland. The boys were playing basketball in the sun, away from the homeowner's 45 kg bull mastiff, fenced off in the yard. As Sheldon went inside to get a drink, he looked at the animal and it attacked without warning. Carolyn remembers the dog launching over the fence to grab her boy like a whale leaping out of water. And she will never forget the moments that followed. The dog launched over the gate, grabbed my baby by the face, and pulled him over the fence and ripped his face off. And this is the mother speaking. So I leapt on it to choke it. And I bit it and punched it. I tried everything to get it off my son. I put my own hand in its mouth. This is the mother. So my boy could slide out from underneath it, and then I yelled, "Run, baby, run!" He was so frightened, there was no sound. His face was hanging off, and the neighbors came to hold his face back on. But then the dog had me. I was being thrown about by the elbow like a rag doll. It was trying to butcher me, and I thought, please take my whole arm off. It was that painful. Carolyn screamed to the owner to get the dog off her, and the owner said, "I can't." And I yelled, "You have to, or I'm going to die." Eventually, the owner wrestled the canine off Carolyn, who ran to her bloodied son. Isn't that amazing? I mean, her first thought, of course, was her son. They were taken to Middlemore Hospital, where they were treated by plastic surgery registrar Gary Avery. He said their injuries were the worst he had seen from a dog attack in his 10-year career. Sheldon had to have a quarter of his face sewn back on. His lower lip, chin, and muscles were reattached with more than 50 stitches. Carolyn needed 30 stitches and 2 operations to mend 5 wounds on her left arm. "They were incredibly brave," said the surgeon. But Carolyn says she does not feel like a hero. And then she said these words, "You do what you need to do as a mother. I saved my son's life, but you would too." I mean, you do what you need to do as a mother. Mums are incredible. Could we give it up for mums? Yeah. So, I mean, that's a story. Is Stephanie here? Malcolm, Stephanie, is she here? I don't know if they are here this morning. No. Mums are incredible. So that's a story I felt to bring. Has anybody else got a story, a scripture, someone else's life? Your own mum, you as a mum, you're the brother of a mum, you know, the list can go on. Who else would like to just come up here? Lois, thanks.
My mum died 17 years ago, but the things I remember about my mum, she was, perhaps hospitality would sum it up. She was a great cook, and there were 7 of us in our family. I was the youngest, and my mum was always having people in. We always had people in for meals and people that we didn't know, whatever. And when we went on holiday, we had a little beach house at Paraparaumu, just a four-room little place, no hot water, a little wee stove with one hot plate. And when we went on holiday, we didn't just have our family, but my mum would ask cousins and neighbours and whatever, and we had all these people. And we didn't just have sandwiches or things like that for lunch. We had three cooked meals a day on this little stove. I often wonder whatever sort of holiday my mum had, but she reckoned she had a wonderful holiday. And people just loved coming away. We had such great times at that little beach house. And you know, even in my mother's last year, when she was 93, she had her leg amputated because of bad circulation. And after she recovered from it, they allowed her to go home and live on her own, provided she had some home help. And you know, she said to me, she said, "I feel so lazy. I can't do anything much." And she said, "If I had a stove that had all the controls down the front instead of at the top, she could, from her wheelchair, cook meals and have people in for dinner." So she investigated this and she bought the stove. I thought it was a crazy idea, but the family went along with it because she was quite strong-willed, my mother, and not like me. But she got the stove, and it was a very, very expensive stove, and I think she only used it three times when her other leg it went wrong too, so she had to have that amputated, and that sort of was the end of her life. But you know, I'll always remember the great food we had. She was a great cook, and I just really appreciate my mum and miss her.
Okay, anybody else like to just come up and share a story, small or big? Yeah, thank you. Could be small, something very small, something big, something minor, major. Hi.
How many minutes do I have? I guess I need an interpreter. No, you can. Actually, the story that I wanted to share today is her birthday. She's not. She is my spiritual mother and my mentor. I'm a social worker, and she's also a social worker. In 20 years ago, the Lord spoke to her through the word Matthew, "Let the little children come to me, for my kingdom belongs to them." During the time, she was an accountant in a World Vision. In a World Vision, I know you know World Vision. She's an accountant, and in that instance, in a way, she became aware on social development. And because of that verse, she started to go in a place called Luneta Park. Luneta Park is one of the historical places in the Philippines wherein our national hero was killed by the Spaniards. And in that area, there are so many street children being prostituted, young girls. And every afternoon after she finished her work, she would go there and gather the children and teach them, do a short Bible study. And one time, during that time also, the Philippines has a very bad law, and the children are not being treated by the policemen. And the children are being exploited by the policemen and even all the people who are in the street. So there was a time when the children are being chased by the police. The children asked them, and her name is Sol Balbero, and today is her 55th birthday. And she's still single, but she mothered for 1,000 children, and even she mothered to me. And I guess she's a very significant person on whatever I am now. The children prayed, together with the children, they prayed that hopefully they would have a place where the children can stay during the time that the police are chasing them. And God really answered prayer. While they are praising the Lord, his name is Brother Heinz Fassel. I don't know if you've heard the gospel ministry. He heard them singing praise song, and it catched his attention. And then Atisol shared to him about his desire, about the children's prayer. And he said, "Okay, we can start like renting a small place where the children can just rest during that time. And God was very faithful that for this time, Kanlungan sa Irma means a refuge for street children. Not only for street children, actually, abandoned, orphaned, prostituted, all sorts of abused children. Ati Sol is our, she's still the executive director of Kanlungan. And every day, the Kanlungan is feeding more than 100 children. There are street children. And Ati Sol is a very significant person because she's 55 years old, and for the last 23 years, she devoted her whole life serving God and serving the street, these children who are in need of special protection. And I just went home 2 weeks ago, and I, in a way, spent a time with her. And I feel, in a way, I feel so happy. I feel so blessed on her commitment with the Lord and serving these children. However, I'm still thinking she's 55 years old, and I am thinking about her future as well. She don't have her own children, but she's very, in a way, she's very committed to her calling, and in a way, she's a mother to me and to many children.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So, anybody else? Anybody else like to, did I see a hand somewhere over there? Come on, guys. Even guys can come up here. There must be 100 stories in this room. Wow. Thank you, friend. Yeah. Oh, we've got Chris. Oh, we'll do this gentleman first and then you, Chris. Yeah, yeah. Hi, mate. Yeah, good to have you here.
Good morning. I want to tell a brief story. Does anybody here know the minister, Jack McFadden? He's a Baptist minister. It's okay if you don't. It was. I think he's since retired, but he wrote a book many years ago about his life as a minister. And he, at one point, was a minister in a Baptist church in Whanganui. And there was a small chapter on one Saturday morning. They were sitting, having breakfast, he and his late wife. And this woman in very dowdy dress clothes, he said, turned up at their doorstep. And she'd come down from Tamanui. She said that the minister up there had said that, excuse me, that she should look up Jack McFadden. And this lady came in, and she was, you know, not in the best of states, etc., and was obviously of quite downtrodden, and she was concerned for her large family that they'd just moved to Whanganui. She was a mother of 8 children, and life was very, very tough for this lady. And Jack went on to write how she was clearly a Christian and had a deep faith in the Lord, and they welcomed her into the community and made a part of the church community there in Whanganui. And she went on to become a wonderful person and a member of the church. And everybody who met her, Jack said, could clearly see that she had a real heart for the Lord, and that despite the hardships and the many kind of difficulties that she faced in her life with a large family and a very, very tough husband, that she was just a wonderful blessing to the community. That was my mother, Mrs. Mariner. And if I love my children, it's because my mother taught me. If I love my wife, Deborah, it's because my mother taught me it was important. And if I know the Lord, it's because my mother introduced me. Thank you, Mum. I owe you my life.
That's so good. We had Chris here.
Steps get bigger every day. I just, when I heard that Mick was going to get folks to talk about mothers in general, and I thought, the thought occurred to me, the legacy that mothers hand down and how they will often span across the generations. So there's two mothers which particularly come to mind with me, as my wee Scottish grandmother. Now, when I was born, I was the youngest of our family, and she must have been about 70 when I was born. But she controlled the family. She was about 5 foot nothing, and a little Scottish lady, but she had a marvellously generous spirit. She, it always amused me when she would see somebody who was probably about 10 years younger than her going down the street, and she'd say, "Oh, look at that poor old soul going to the street there. We need to help her." And the legacy that sort of followed down through our family, it's a simple little one, but she was full of little sayings and nuances and things of that sort. And I actually captured my own daughter when we saw her recently using one of the expressions that she's obviously got from me, which had been passed down from my grandmother. So it's just the generational things that mums do and the effect they have. Now, the other mother is my mother-in-law. Now, sadly, mum, as I called her, is not with us anymore, but we were at a family gathering last night, and it just came over to me just how, even through, we were celebrating my brother-in-law's 60th birthday, as to her presence was still there. We were looking at lots of family photos and things, and she was a wonderful lady of God. I remember particularly, and this is, I'll finish on this, was when Melanie and I first came to New Zealand. We were going through the usual thing of immigrants. You know, fortunately we had family here, but we were going through some of the trials and stresses, and we were just, Melanie and I were just talking one afternoon, and Melanie's mum just came out onto the patio we were, and said, you know, we talked about what we were talking about, and she said, right, we sit down and we pray. And all of a sudden, you know, the problems that we were sort of trying to resolve just seemed to go away. So it's really a plug for mother-in-laws.
Thank you. Okay. Who else has got? Yes, Julie. Julie, come on. Yeah, great. Yeah. You've got two mums. Yeah, tell us about them.
Karen, he took me away. I was sick on the floor. And see, my room mum right there for me.
She wasn't there.
Yes. He said.
So you were sick on the floor, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And who was there for you?
I would say, say what to me?
And you have got two mums, you said before, Julie,
yeah.
And who are they again?
Karen.
Karen.
And who else?
No, room mum at home.
And what do you most appreciate about both of them?
I don't. No, I'm not like.
There's one that you like. Yeah, okay. Oh, okay. And what do you most like about her?
Well, is that Karen? Yeah. Be there for me when I'm sick.
Yeah. So when you're really, really sick, she's been there for you.
Yeah.
That's so special. Okay. Thank you, Jill. Thank you. Anybody else like to come up and share a story? Yeah, great.
I just want to acknowledge the everyday mum. You know my sister Jodie. Her and I are both studying. Now, without my mum, we wouldn't be able to get our assignments in and things like that. My mum takes care of my children. She picks up my children every morning. She's there, you know, 8:30 and getting them off to school. And she picks them up for me after school as well. Without her, I'd probably be a tragic mess, not being able to get my assignments in and all that sort of stuff. And Jodie's the same, so she does that every day. And come the weekends after church, we're up to mum's. That's what we do. And our mum is just all about care and hospitality, and I really appreciate the fact that that's the role that she's taken, and that's what she puts all of her heart and soul into.
Okay, who's next? This is so good. Yeah, fine, great.
I'd just like to bring to mind the roles of mothers and how they change. My mother's 90 now, and I think I'm struggling with the fact that she's 90 and can't do so much, can't hear much, can't see much. And that's changed my role with her. And I wish that I could see more positive things. I mean, she's still with us and, you know, you should be making the most of it. It's fantastic. But I think I really struggle with her age, her incapacity, and, yeah, how things have changed, how it's changed for me being her daughter. And there's a lot of guilt goes with it because I didn't go up and see her, haven't been to see her for 3 days, and she's in care. There's guilt goes with it, and there's not a lot of satisfaction goes with visiting her, and I wish there was. I wish there was. And there's a lot of duty goes with it, what I should be doing and what I don't do, and it's Mother's Day today. And yes, we'll bring her back to our place this afternoon, but is it duty or is it love that I'm doing it for? And, yeah.
That kind of honesty is so good. Thank you. Is there someone else that would like to, another person who'd like to share? Yeah, yeah. Oh, now we're on a roll. If we go with Ruth here, yeah, and then we'll go with Dale. Yeah, is that Dale? Did you have your hand up? Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Ruth, and then Michael. Yeah. This is Ruth. So would you like to come up here, Ruth? Or do you like to stay down there?
No, no, no.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
There you are, speaking to
the mic. I'll follow on from Anne. When my mum was in the last years of her life, she called me mother because of her dementia. And I just was so grateful to the Lord for the word that he gave me. After she died, I was really sad that I wasn't with her at that time. I had been with her all day and felt that I needed to go home. And in the morning, they rang to tell me that she'd passed away. And I said, Lord, I wanted to be with her. I'm sorry I wasn't with her. And the Lord said to me, I was with her. Even if I pass through the valley of the shadow of death, thou art with me, the Lord reminded me. I had not just a mother, but I had several mothers in the Lord, as well as a mother-in-law. My mother was a single, divorced mother. She lost her husband to divorce, my younger sister to tubercular meningitis at the age of 8, and she had a hysterectomy for cancer. And that all happened within 3 years in her life. And life was absolutely miserable. Her mother was in the background and her mother-in-law supporting her as she had to go back to work. Now, you know, in those days, divorce was a real stigma. There was no DPB. And my mum was just absolutely brilliant at picking herself up and carrying on and doing what mothers do, looking after their offspring. But because of her depression, a lot of it came out on me. And I have to say that I withdrew from my mum because I didn't want to keep on being hurt. And I can remember once when she was giving me a hiding, I said to myself, I'm not going to let her see that this hurts me. And that was the relationship that I had with my mother for years, that I was emotionally withdrawn from her. I took everything that she did for me for granted, didn't know any better when I was young. She gave me a wonderful opportunity for a good education, music and everything. She found it very hard when I became a Christian. She reacted negatively, as did her mum, towards it. And at that stage, God brought the first mother-in-law into my life, my Bible class leader. And you know, through these mothers in the Lord that the Lord brought into my life, he grew me up. The second mother in the Lord was on the mission field. Now, Mum found it very hard to say goodbye to me and let me go overseas, as you can imagine. But through that experience, her life was so enriched. On board came all the other people that God had brought into the family, my family, looking after me on the mission field and so on. But this one lady in particular, I'd just gone to live with her, and I was at a shop in the village just north of Kuala Lumpur. And the shopkeeper, an Indian man, said to me, "Is that lady your mother-in-law?" Because they had no concept that two single ladies of different ages could be living together unless they were actually related by marriage. So I went home and I said to Fern, "They think that you're my mother-in-law." And from that day on, we called each other Middle and Dill. But she was actually my second mother in the Lord, because she had such a wonderful, prayerful influence. And when I said to her years later, "Fern, I was just so grateful for all that you have done for me," she said, "Well, when you came to live with me, I just prayed that God would help me to love you." He did. We can never, ever underestimate the power of prayer and love. Tough love, not just sentimental, wishy-washy stuff. But in the last years of my life, of my mother's life, or even in those years when I was away, God brought all these wonderful, loving people from the church family, because, praise God, my mum came to personal faith in Christ. And they supported her in the loss of her mum while I was away. It was just so wonderful the way in which, you know, the church family becomes our own family when we haven't got our own family, as it were. So in those last years of her life, God said to me over and over again, as he taught me to love her with his love, to accept, to ask his forgiveness for the resentment that I'd held against her, to be able to forgive her with his forgiveness for the hurts that I'd experienced growing up, to honour her and to really come to allow her to touch me and for me to be able to touch her after having withdrawn from her. It was just so wonderful to know the restoring love of God in that relationship with my mum. To really be able to say to her, "Mum, I love you. I think you're the most wonderful mum in the world. And thank God for all that she became to me."
Dale, just very briefly, and then we'll very briefly, Michael. Yeah, okay. Dale.
Yeah, go for it, mate. Yeah, thanks. I'll just talk about my mum, obviously, for a bit. I was originally born in South Africa, in the motherland. When she was growing up, her parents, they were really, really strict, parents, like way overly strict to quite like an oppressive sort of a way. And so she grew up with this, this idea that she really didn't want to take that into her family. And so, with that, she, but my grandparents took her to church when she was young, and so she went through that. But because they were so hard, she didn't want to do things their way, so she sort of went away from the church. And when we were moving to New Zealand, my mum said to God, she said, "Lord, if you get us there safely without any hiccups, I'll start going to church again." And sure enough, like, it was all smooth sailing. And when we got to New Zealand, she was like, "Oh, man, I have to keep my word." And she started going to church again, and she started bringing me and my brother. But the church that she went to as a child was, I won't name any denominations, but it wasn't a good church, pretty much. It was, just another one, just completely bound by rules and regulations. And the males were just the top, and women just never spoke, and there were no musical instruments. It was all hymns. It was horrible. But yeah, so when she decided to go back to church, she was like, oh, okay. So also, like, there's no other church. That's the only church so you can get to heaven pretty much. And so she was like, oh, got to go to that church, because that's how she was raised to believe that's the right church. But she's always had such a strong sort of sense of right from wrong. So when she was getting into the church, this was about maybe 5 years we were there, and she was reading the Bible, and she was seeing the actions of this church, and she just saw too many conflicts, and she started questioning the leaders, the men. She started questioning the men of this church and saying, we're doing this, but the Bible is saying this, and they're like, no, you know, just forget, you know, this is right, you know, and all this. And she eventually, at the end of it, she called them a brood of vipers. She quoted Jesus talking to the Pharisees. No, this is serious. This is my mum. She's amazing. And she said, you know, you guys are a brood of vipers. You load all these heavy burdens and you don't lift a finger to help them, you know. And she's, that's amazing. And so she left and she took a whole bunch of people with her. And she moved us to a Baptist church. Not this one. Another one. But yeah, so I owe a lot to my mum. So she moved us there and I started getting into a youth group, and I started to actually form my own relationship with God. So I've got a lot to owe for my mum. Yes,
sir. Okay. And by the way, that whole kind of teaching of the man as the head of the home thing, tonight that's my topic and I want to basically debunk it. I don't think it's biblical. So anyway, Michael, very briefly, bro. Yeah.
Yeah, you will do.
All I want to say is that my mum, she was a very good mother to me. She a good cook and also a good knitter. And not only that, she made our shirts, our cardigans and our shorts as well. And Mum didn't have to go and buy anything from the shop. She made them all. And this is how I love my mum. But the best thing about my mum was in 1989, the year she died, when the nurse went down to the room, my mother was still sitting up in her bed. She had her Woman's Weekly crossword puzzle across her knee and the pen still in her hand, and she had a little smile in her face, and that's how the nurse found her when she died. And this is the happy memory I have of my mum.
Okay, Dave, thank you. That was so good. I mean, it would be great to hear more stories. We've just run out of time. So excellent. Brilliant. Thanks, Dave. And we'll finish with the service with us.
Yeah, a couple of times here, yeah.